Katie Wilson, clad in snow-crusted boots and a parka with a fur-lined hood, climbed into the 2001 Ford Explorer and pulled the door closed behind her. Smoke hung heavy in the air, and the oldies' song piped through the speakers, all sunshine, happiness, and bubblegum. "How much?" the man asked, as he navigated the Explorer away from the corner.
100, Katie said, glancing at him but avoiding his eyes. She never made eye contact with a customer. If she did, she felt dirty.
"All right,"
he said, flicking his cigarette out the window.
"I'm Jim, by the way."
"Katie," she said, forcing a smile. Jim was tall and thin with a receding hairline and thick black glasses. He wore a dull brown coat over a plaid shirt. She took him for an outdoorsman type, typical for Northwest Alaska.
"How old are you, Katie?"
Jim asked as he turned onto Pine Street, which led away from the heart of downtown and into the rugged wilderness. Ahead, the road curved around a snow-covered hillside dotted with pine trees and disappeared.
22,
Katie lied. In actuality, she was 17. She never told a customer her real age. Though a lot of guys liked young girls, not many were willing to go to prison for one. She looked older, anyway. Hard living on the streets and a healthy drug habit will do that to you.
"You're young," he commented.
On the radio, the Beach Boys came on, their mellow, summery sounds standing in stark contrast to the winter tundra around them.
"How long have you been doing this?"
2 years,
Katie said. Another lie. She had only been hooked for 6 months.
"Where are you from?"
His questions were beginning to unnerve her. Johns didn't usually batter you with questions. They did you and laughed. What if he was a cop?
"Right here."
"Timberville?"
"Mm-hmm."
Strike three. She was originally from Anchorage. She left 2 weeks ago after her father kicked her out of the house. He didn't like her boyfriend, Darnell, because he was black. She wanted to stay in Anchorage, but Darnell convinced her to come to Timberville. Then he convinced her to start selling herself. Most of her customers were ice road trucker types, hauling freight to the remote towns and villages dotted the northern reaches of the state. They were gruff, hard, and scary. Jim wasn't like them. There was a softness about his face, the kind you'd see in a man who worked behind a desk and couldn't change his own tire if his life depended on it.
"Your family here?"
If he was a cop, she realized, fine, she'd go to jail, whatever. She was sick of this life anyway. When her sentence was over, she could come out and build a new one for herself. Get a job, an apartment, a boyfriend who didn't let other men have sex with her.
"Hey, Katie."
"Huh?"
Coming out of her reprieve, she saw that Jim was looking at her.
"I said, do you have family here?"
"No,"
she said, telling the truth.
"That's too bad,"
Jim said, looking back at the road. A timber truck screamed around a corner and started the descent into town. Thick gray smoke belching from the exhaust behind the cab. It was followed by a silver minivan and a battered blue pickup truck with white trim.
"I don't have family here either," Jim said.
"I'm just up here for a few weeks working on the pipeline." She assumed he meant the Cherrystone pipeline, which was being built near Rocky Top. She didn't know much about it, only that a lot of people thought it was going to hurt the environment.
"Do you have a family?"
Katie asked, because she felt like she had to say something.
"Back home?"
Jim lit another cigarette. A weather forecast came on the radio. A storm was expected to hit overnight, dumping 5 inches before moving east into Canada.
"No,"
he finally said. "An ex-wife, but that's it." For a while, they drove in silence, the humming of the tires on the pavement lulling Katie into a near stupor as she gazed at the countryside without dense walls of pine trees, snow, rocks, and not much else. An ABC news break came on. A Russian jet had buzzed a Navy destroyer in the Persian Gulf. The president was talking tough. Two guys shot up a diner in Florida, one coming through the back door while the other crouched in the trunk of a car in the parking lot. When the people ran from the first guy, the second guy picked them off. At least 8 people were killed, including the gunman, 2 former employees.
"Where are you taking me?"
Katie asked. They had been driving for what seemed like a long time, and the mountains were closing in around them. "I have a motel room up here," he said. "About a mile."
"Okay."
Katie nodded, but she was suddenly scared. This wasn't right. They were too far out in the wilderness. A mile further on, Jim hung a right and piloted the Explorer down a rutted dirt road flanked on either side by massive trees. The trunk jostled and shook.
"I thought you said we were going to your motel,"
Katie asked, grabbing the handhold over the door. "We are." Half a mile from the highway, the woods fell away, and Katie beheld not a motel, but a small airport. A squat tower stood against the pregnant white sky, with low metal hangars lined a runway.
"This isn't a motel."
Jim didn't reply, only glanced at her. There was something in his eyes, something feral. Katie reached for the door handle. But it wasn't there. It had been removed. Terror burst into Katie's chest when she realized what was happening to her.
"Let me out,"
she cried, banging on the window.
"Hey!"
Jim shouted. He reached over, caught a handful of her hair, and dragged her closer to him. Pain exploded through her head. "I'm not going to hurt you," he said. "Just knock it off." Hysteria had already overwhelmed her. She thrashed and kicked, hitting the window and cracking it. "Bitch," Jim growled. He let go of her hair and hit her in the side of the head so hard, she blacked out. Unconscious, Katie Wilson dreamed. She dreamed that Jim dragged her out of the Ford and helped her to a waiting plane, as though she were a drunk on her way home. Dreams that he bound her hands with yellow rope and shoved a dirty rag in her mouth. It tasted like oil. Dreams that they were soaring high above the Alaska wilderness. Rivers, towns, lakes, and mountains dotted the world below. Off in the distance, she thought she even saw the ocean. When she woke for good, she was slumped in a leather chair, her face pressed against cold glass. Outside, she saw woods, a metal hangar, and a ribbon of concrete. She sat up just as Jim ripped the door open and stuck a pistol in her face. "If you try anything, you're dead. Got it?" An involuntary cry escaped her lips, muffled by the rag taped in her mouth. "Got it?" She nodded. "Good," he said, grabbed her jacket and dragged her out of the plane. A green Jeep Grand Cherokee stood nearby. He got behind her, shoved the gun into the small of her back, and pushed her forward. At the Jeep, he opened the passenger door and shoved her in, looking quickly around like a boy who had stolen a candy bar from the gas station. He hurried around the front end of the Jeep and climbed in. "Get down in the footwell," he said. Obeying, Katie slipped off the seat and into the footwell. Glancing repeatedly at her, Jim threw the Jeep into drive and spun the wheel. As they drove, Katie silently prayed and tried, in vain, to keep terrible thoughts out of her mind. What was he going to do to her? Where was he taking her? A thousand terrible visions raced throughout her panicked mind, and a pitiful whimper escaped her throat. "Shut up," Jim hissed, and prodded her with the gun. She bit down on the rag. She must have been whimpering still, because he turned up the radio. Frida Payne mourned her way through Band of Gold. Katie closed her eyes and thought of Darnell, back in Timberville, waiting for her at the motel. Would he miss her if she didn't come back? Or would he move on to find another girl to pimp out? Jim spun the wheel, and they turned onto a bumpy, unpaved road. Band of Gold had given way to Rescue Me by Fontella Bass. Jim smiled, glanced down at her.
Rescue me,
he sang.
I need you and your love too.
He grabbed her with the gun, then a look of hatred crossed his face.
Come on and rescue me.
She begged for him to stop, the words muffled. No one's gonna rescue you, bitch, he said, jamming the gun into her back. She tried to squirm away, but the door stopped her. Panting, Jim turned his attention back to the road. No one's gonna rescue you, he repeated. Katie squeezed her eyes closed against a rush of tears and tried to rein in her slamming heart. Something told her he was right. No one would rescue her. A little while later, the Jeep came to an abrupt stop and the music died. Jim got out of the car and came around to her side, pulling the door open. Come on, he said, grabbing her and dragging her out. She tried to get her feet under her, but before she could, he was shoving her to the ground. Her face smashed into a hard hunk of snow, and she felt her bottom lip tear. Without speaking, he grabbed her by the back of her jacket and started dragging her. The hot, coppery taste of blood filled her mouth, and tears slid down her cheeks, where the icy air froze them instantly. The fight had gone out of her, and she offered no resistance. Ahead, she saw a set of weather-beaten wood stairs. At the bottom one, he stopped. Now, something quick and unexpected came over Katie, and in one fluid motion, she spun around and hit him with a well-placed right. Pain exploded up her arm. Jim grunted and stumbled back, falling. She turned and started running away from the house. A dirt road separated Jim's property from a field sloping up to a distant highway.
Bitch!
Jim roared. She half turned, and he was running after her. She screamed and turned back to the road. When Jim hit her, the air exploded from her lungs. She hit the ground and almost blacked out again.
You're lucky I didn't shoot you,
he hissed over, bared teeth. This time, all the fight really left her, and she meekly let herself be dragged across the yard, up the stairs, and into the cabin. Katie sat stiffly in an overstuffed armchair as Jim selected a record from the rack beneath his ancient hi-fi and put it on the turntable. Lobo came on with I'd Love You to Love Me, hissing, crackling. The cabin was a three-bedroom affair with a living room and kitchen open to each other. The decor was decidedly 70s, an ugly couch, ugly carpeting, and stone fireplace. They had been in the cabin for what felt like years, but couldn't have been more than hours. At first, Jim bound her hands and feet with rope and left her on the couch like a macabre decoration. His fevered eyes darting to her every so often as he hustled around the house, cleaning, organizing, and unpacking. When he was done, he brought in three different rifles, sat them in the armchair to Katie's right, and laid them across his lap. Katie stared at them warily, the way one might at a dangerous and wholly unpleasant creepy crawly. He painstakingly explains the ins and outs of each one, paying special attention to what they did to the human body. This one will leave an exit wound in you bigger than my fist. Then he laughed. Now, getting to his feet, Jim came to her like an angel of death, and Katie's heart skipped a fearful beat.
Would you like to dance?
He asked. She didn't reply. He grabbed her by the scruff of her sweater and forced her to stand. He pulled her body flush to his, buried his face in the crook of her neck, and clutched her butt, making her shudder in revulsion.
It's nice, isn't it?
He asked as he moved them stiffly back and forth. She didn't reply.
My junior prom.
The horror and hopelessness of her situation hit her all at once, and she began to cry.
Shh, shh, shh,
Jim said, stroking her hair.
It'll all be over soon. Please,
she sobbed.
Let me go.
Later, he said. Tomorrow.
Just spend the night with me before you die. That made her cry even harder.
After a while, he set her back on the couch while he made dinner. Spent, Katie stared into space, her pink-rimmed eyes shimmering with unshed tears, and her lips pressed severely together. She made an attempt to escape. Deep, ashy twilight colored the frosty window pane as she was in only her panties, socks, and tank top. If she made it out the door and managed to get away from him, she'd freeze to death in minutes. And while freezing was probably better than whatever Jim had in store for her, she really, really, really didn't want to die. Sometime later, he brought her a plate and sat it on the coffee table in front of her.
"You should eat," he said. "You'll need your strength."
He changed records on the hi-fi. The sweet belted out Little Willie. Jim danced and sang along as he fixed his own plate. He sat in his armchair, and Katie swallowed thickly. At any moment, he could fall on her, rip her clothes off, and a shiver ripped down her spine.
"Here's how it is,"
he said, around a mouthful of mashed potatoes.
"Tomorrow at dawn, I'm gonna let you go. Then I'm gonna come after you, and I won't be alone."
Katie swallowed again.
"I have a bloodhound,"
he smiled.
"Well, not really a bloodhound. You'll see. I think it's an alien, monster, something. I found it in the woods a while back."
He shoved another forkful of potatoes into his mouth.
"It's really cool."
Katie's stomach turned, just when she thought he couldn't get any crazier.
"It's a hell of a tracker, too. Before I found it, I had two girls almost get away. Now, with it, no chance."
He chuckled. Later, he cuffed her to the radiator below his bedroom window. He leaned in and whispered,
"I hope for your sake I find you, and not the bloodhound. It'll be easier that way."
He turned out the lights and went to sleep then. And Kathy was left alone with his snoring and the realization that she was going to die. That Jim was totally insane, and he was going to kill her. She cried silently, and surprisingly, fell into a deep and restful sleep. When she woke, it was to Jim shaking her. He was wearing the same brown coat from the day before, but now, gloves, boots, a cap with ear flaps, and sunglasses. A high-power rifle was slung over his shoulder. The pistol was tucked into the waistband of his pants.
"Time to go," he said, uncuffing her.
Surprising herself, Katie lunged for the pistol, but anticipating her action, Jim punched her in the side of the head so hard she saw stars. Literally.
"You're a feisty one,"
he said, dragging her to her feet. She was lightheaded and felt like she was going to puke.
"You have it pretty damn well,"
he continued as he led her into the living room.
"I could be raping you or cutting you apart piece by piece right now, but I'm not. How about some gratitude?"
Outside, the air was bitter. Fresh snow lay on the ground. Poking her in the back with the rifle, Jim led her around the back of the house to what looked like a stable.
"Hey, buddy, you up?"
Jim called. He pushed open a wooden door. He said something about an alien last night, and while Katie didn't believe him, her heartbeat quickened regardless. She whipped her head away and closed her eyes so she wouldn't have to see Jim's bloodhound, whatever it may be.
"Look,"
he commanded.
"No,"
she said, her voice weak. Jim grabbed her by her hair and forced her to.
"Look at it."
Slowly, Katie pried her eyes open. Lit by flickering firelight, the inside of the stable was carpeted with hay. Sickly heat and the sickly sweet odor of decay washed over her, and her gourd rose. At first, she said nothing. Then, a
strange shape took form in the shadows. A wet, squelching sounded as it inched its way into the light like a giant worm, and Katie's blood ran cold. An excited grin spread across Jim's lips, and his grip on the back of her parka tightened.
No.
The thing slithered into the light, and when Katie gazed upon it, a shocked wheeze escaped her throat. It was long and cylindrical, like a snake, its mottled flesh white and covered in fine hairs that quivered as they seemed to taste the frigid morning air. It had no legs that Kathy could see, but it did have teeth. Rows and ranks of saliva-coated fangs crowding a wide, yawning maw. Dozens, maybe hundreds of tiny black eyes clustered atop what passed for its head, putting her in mind of a spider. And when they met hers, they gleamed with wicked and terrifying intelligence. A tremble ripped through Katie's frame. And Jim let out a hearty laugh of sadistic amusement.
Like I said, he told her, I hope I'm the one who finds you, and not him.
For the first time, Katie completely agreed with him. Jim loaded her into the jeep and drove 20 minutes to their destination. The thing was in a trailer, hitched to the back, and every so often it moved from side to side, making the truck quiver. On the radio, CK and the Sunshine Band grooved their way through Boogie Shoes.
We're 20 miles away from even a fire road, Jim said. If you can survive, you can go. If not...
He let the thought hang unfinished between them. He was lying. As much as she wanted to hope, she knew in her heart that he wouldn't willingly let her go. Eventually, Jim parked the jeep in a snowy clearing encircled by towering pines and dragged her out. A preternatural hush lay over the woodlands, as though the world were holding its breath in anticipation. Untying her hands, he shoved her away, and she stumbled in the near knee-high powder.
Go on. You got 5 minutes.
She was running before he'd even finished speaking. It wasn't until she reached the tree line that she realized she was whimpering and saying,
Cut, 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 over and over again, like a mantra.
Before she bounded into the forest, she looked back and saw Jim opening the trailer and leading the monster out on a leash. It bucked and thrashed, its head tossing back and forth. Maybe she was hysterical, but she imagined she could hear it panting with dark excitement. The trees were spaced widely apart. From the clearing, the land sloped up. Leaning against one of the trees and fighting back her sobs, Katie took a deep breath and glanced back. Whatever she did, she couldn't let that thing catch her. Its slimy body on hers, its fetid breath breaking over her face, its teeth ripping and rending. She shuddered and let out a strangled moan that echoed through the forest. Pushing away from the trunk, she trudged through the ever-deepening snow as quickly as she could, heart blasting and the back of her neck tingling. As the land grated up, the snow thinned out until it was only to her ankles. Jim's voice rose behind her, seeming to come on every side.
Yeah!
In other words, let the game begin. Not looking where she was going, she hit a fallen tree and fell hard, skinning her knees and elbows. A strange, shrieking cry consumed the day, and Katie's soul petrified.
We're coming for you, Katie!
Jim yelled. She looked back and saw an impossibly fast flash of white between the trees. She let out a strangled cry and turned back. A stream was coming up. Icy cold water splashing over smooth, rounded rocks. Maybe she could lose its scent. She'd seen old movies where convicts on the road lost bloodhounds by going through water. When she bounded into the creek, she let out an involuntary gasp and froze. The water was bitterly cold, sapping the heat from her flesh and bones, burning them, numbing them, She hesitated, but the thing screamed again. Closer. Then, holding her arms straight out on either side of her for balance, she picked her way downstream. The soles of her boots slipped, and her heart jumped into her throat, but she kept from falling. A half mile down, the stream opened up and became deeper. She waded out, rested on the bank, and listened. Other than her own ragged breathing, the day was silent. A gunshot rang out then, kicking up a cloud of dirt next to her, and she jumped. She saw Jim standing behind a tree 100 feet away, the rifle in his arms. He reloaded and fired again, hitting the water in front of her. Screaming, she got back to her feet and started to run. But the thing appeared, a low, rattling hiss issuing from its mouth. Katie's heart stopped, and she fell back a step, her eyes widening in horror.
Trapped, bitch!
Jim yelled. The thing surged toward her like a wave of toxic sludge, and on pure instinct, she darted right, just as Jim pulled the trigger again. The whip crack of the rifle filled the day, scaring birds into flight. The monster let out an unearthly screech of misery and pain. The bullet had struck it in the face, ripping away most of its eye. Green ichor oozed from its ruined cranium and dropped onto the snow like acid rain, where it sizzled.
No!
Jim screamed. Katie gaped. The thing moaned, shuddered, and collapsed. Holding his hands to his mouth, Jim approached, wading into the water.
Buddy, are you okay?
The concern in his voice was sickening. Just as he reached the bank, the thing came back to life. Katie saw its eyes fix on its master. And in them, she saw one thing. Hatred.
Buddy.
Jim said, sounding elated. The thing came toward him.
Hey, buddy. What?
The thing crashed into him, and he let out a shocked cry. Katie didn't see the rest, for she fled then. But she heard it. Jim's frenzied screams growing higher and higher before cutting out, and the thing's excited panting staying with her for the rest of her life.